We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovex. Joining me today is Christopher Aaron. He's the founder of iGold Advisor and Elite Private Placements. Thanks for joining me today, Christopher. Great to have you back.
Thank you so much, Tom, for having me back.
So, Christopher, you know, we're recording this on April the 18th here. It seems like, you know, another day of escalation. Iran was just attacked on their own soil. And I wanted to start by getting your feeling, let's say, on what you see, let's say, as a parallel time for this gold market right now, and what these geopolitical tensions or events mean for this market.
Yeah, so this is a quite fascinating period that we're living through here, and as you said, this is being recorded on a Thursday night when Israel has retaliated against Iran by attacking Iran on Iranian soil. So this is certainly an escalation as the wars in the Middle East go. And we did see on that news, which just came out about 2 hours ago, we saw gold spike by about $40 up to about $2,420 in the spot market. It did not make a new all-time high yet. The high that I am looking at from just a few days ago was 2,431 as the all-time high now at the present moment. So has not made an all-time high yet. I should say that gold has here in the overnight hours given back about two-thirds of that gain here in just a couple hours. So there's some real geopolitical tensions here. I think it's important for investors to remember the period around September 11th, 2001. If we rewind 23 years ago, you know, gold spiked almost 7% on the attacks on September 11th, 2001. So, you know, in today's terms, that would be like gold rising by about $175, you know, immediately. It's important to remember that after those attacks happened, over the subsequent weeks, gold gave back that entire gain. Gold fell back down to actually nominally below where it was when we fast forward into late October, early November. Gold fell back to below where it was at the onset of the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center. So throughout history, we see often that the gold market, when it is responding to these geopolitical tensions, that these price gains tend to be short-lived, again, over the short and intermediate term. However, the broader context is always the key thing to remember. So when we have these short-term spikes that happen, especially when they're happening in sort of a near vertical way, that price behavior tends to be unsustainable. But here, if we back out the gold chart, you know, and talk about what's been going on over the last 4 or 5 years, just a month and a half ago, we have seen gold break a very clear four-year consolidation pattern. One of the most clear consolidations that I have ever seen in studying these gold markets for the last 15 years. So 4 years of consolidation underneath the 2075 level. Even though this sort of near vertical price behavior on gold should not sustain itself, the message of a longer four-year breakout is going to be the more important point when we fast forward later this year into 2025, 2026.
So, Christopher, you and I were discussing a little bit about sentiment right now as well. You know, we've been seeing, you know, these new all-time highs week after week, and this just this march higher almost, you know, new high. But it doesn't seem like sentiment is really following that. You know, we were discussing the feeling between, you know, myself, other podcasters in the space, your experience with your subscribers, it doesn't really seem to be, you know, gaining any new interest. Is that, you know, a fair thing to say at this point?
It is. And I would argue from a contrarian standpoint, which is how we need to think about this, this is an extremely bullish situation for the next couple of years, again, setting up in this market. I want to rewind and just share a couple anecdotes with the viewers from my experience about 15 years ago in this market. You know, I started really paying attention to the precious metals market in 2007 as the housing bubble was building in the United States, which led to the global financial crisis, the subprime crisis, as it was called then. And then after the global financial crash, into the final wave of that bull market from the 2000s, when gold peaked at about $1,900 per ounce in 2011. And please remember that $1,900 per ounce was a 9-year peak. After that, so we're talking almost a decade that it took gold to fall from 1900 until 2020 when it finally got back to that level. So for the sake of understanding these sentiment indicators, the 2020 peak, excuse me, the 2011 peak was significant, quite significant multi-year peak. In 2011, I had, in addition to the work that I'm doing now, you know, I was publishing some notes to investors. I was investing in the sector myself. But I had, outside of the investment group that I was involved in, I had no less than 20 individuals coming up to me from other walks of my life. You know, I'm talking friends, I'm talking people that I know from church, I'm talking my, you know, people that I know from the gym and exercise classes that I go to, friends of friends that started to learn that I was involved in precious metals in 2010 and 2011. No less than 20 individuals coming up to me, asking me about buying gold, buying silver, and buying gold mining companies, you know, that we are involved in here. And so that type of interest from people that are previously not involved in the sector, we can look back in retrospect and say that that is pretty much coinciding with a longer term peak. You know, if we're watching out for, hey, when is gold going to form, let's say, a multi-year or even a multi-decade top, like we saw in the year 1980, we need to watch out for very bullish sentiment from more mainstream types of people, mainstream investors, right? Now we have gold that is about $400 above its 2011 peak. And I have had one single person from outside the existing precious metals community here. I've had one single person, and that is my dear aunt, who I love very much, come up to me and ask me about getting involved in the precious metals sector. And by the way, she purchased 1 ounce of gold. So that's the extent of the mainstream interest that I see at this point, which is telling me that even though when we look at these geopolitical price spikes, which may in fact come back to retest their breakout points over the pending months here, it tells me that we are not yet at a long-term top situation for this market, which is a very encouraging thing to think about.
So, you know, why do you think that could be, Christopher? Is it because there's just too many other exciting assets in the financial world right now, do you think?
Absolutely. That's what I think. If we can look up and pull up these charts of the Dow Jones versus gold, if we look at the short-term chart first, which plots gold versus the Dow on a one-to-one scale just over the last 2 years, here we go. I mean, look at the tightness of the correlation between gold, the 5,000-year store of wealth, and the longest dated stock index that we have in the United States. I mean, we have data going back for the Dow Jones back to the mid 1800s. Mm-hmm. One is the ultimate safe haven in the world. One is the barometer for industrial capacity. Why are these things basically trading in lockstep plus or minus a couple weeks here and there over the last 2 years? You know, why are these assets trading in lockstep like this? We could answer that question. It's because markets are preoccupied with, as a primary focal point, they're preoccupied with Fed policy right now related to interest rate policy. There's really, and so you have traders and then the algorithms that build up around the traders that are just taking an all or nothing approach to almost all markets out there, whether we're talking gold, whether we're talking Dow Jones, whether we're talking cryptocurrencies, currency markets. It's a yes, no. We're in a binary type of period right now for the markets, mm-hmm. where these algorithms and traders are just saying buy everything or sell everything, depending on expectations for Fed policy. But that's the why, but it's more the ramifications of this that are the important thing for talking about that sentiment or the lack thereof of that sentiment. Investors in precious metals have to think about what a mainstream investor is living through right now, where their 401k funds, their stock index funds, their tax-free savings accounts, as you have up there in Canada, where most people invest in sort of diversified stock index funds. Those investors have done just as well over the last several years in those funds as they have in gold. And so that average investor is mostly absent from this sector right now still. And if we could go to the next chart, which shows the longer term look at the Dow to gold.
I like that divergence at the end of that chart as well. That's interesting to see the Dow falling versus gold continuing to rise.
Yes, just here over the last couple of weeks. And so that's why I had a question mark on that one, on that spread between the Dow and the gold. Mm-hmm. Just the last 3 weeks here or so, we've seen a notable shift in that. And so I have a question mark. Is this the start of the real break? Is this the start of the real divergence? That remains to be seen from the markets here right now. It's certainly a step in the right direction, but I'm not willing to give my stamp of approval yet to say it has decisively broken in favor of gold. When we look at this chart now, this is showing the complete history of gold in the freely traded era. Mm-hmm. As compared to that Dow Jones industrial average. And so what you can see from the red shading from basically 2016 through the present, look at this. The price of gold is up 2.5 times from 1,000 to almost 2,500. And during that period of time, the Dow to gold ratio is completely flat, completely flat. We have never seen this before in the history of gold trading. Every other time that the gold price itself has been in a bull market, we have seen that Dow to gold ratio compressing lower in favor of gold, meaning the average person who previously would have been in their stock index funds at some point in that cycle said, my goodness, I'm not outperforming gold here. I'm not keeping up with gold. I need to at least take 10, if not 20, if not more percent of my money and move it into gold. And you multiply that out by a few hundred million people around the world and in the Western world, some of which would have taken portions of that and said, whoa, okay, I'm going to spend a couple $1,000 per ounce on gold. No, I'm going to instead buy several hundred ounces of silver. Or then the logical extension of that is I'm going to buy several thousand shares in a basket of gold mining companies. That average investor, that marginal investor, but what is going to represent a much more significant portion of the overall investment capital, that investor has been not in the precious metal sector in this cycle because this Dow to gold ratio has been moving sideways. And you can see here in the red shading, it's really not just for the last 2 years. As a net sum, it's the last 8 years. It's basically since 2016. We've got a flat Dow to gold ratio as a net sum. Again, we're living through something that has never happened before in precious metals history. and it's not going to last very longer. We looked at the beginning of that divergence in the last chart. It is possible that we are seeing the beginning of a more significant divergence. I don't want to call that for sure yet. I want to see several more months of data come in on this. But whichever way it breaks, you know, if this breaks in favor of gold, we're not just going to be talking about a year or two of outperformance. We're going to be talking about a decade or two of outperformance, as has happened in these previous cycles. So investors need to follow this relationship between the Dow Jones and gold extremely carefully here over the next several months.
Mm-hmm. Christopher, do you think this is actually in some ways a good thing for the market that nobody really seems to be paying attention at this point?
Yes. Yes. You know, back to some of those sentiment indicators, the anecdotes from my personal life. Another very interesting one is to look at here in the West. We have a lot of these gold ETFs. You know, we've got the GLD fund, the IAU fund. We've got the Sprott physical gold fund, a number of others. We have seen here, as gold is breaking out, we have seen these ETFs actually losing gold holdings, and they're losing gold holdings because mainstream investors are selling their shares even as the price has been skyrocketing here. Mm-hmm. And so that's another indication to me, whether we're talking about that, whether we're talking about, like, again, I had a couple dozen people come up to me in 2010 and 2011 from, you know, people from exercise classes, people from social gatherings that I would go to, say, hey, I'm thinking about buying some silver. You know, what do you think about that? Again, I've had one person do that in this cycle. And so if we kind of overlay the fact that we have to remember, markets peak on extreme bullish sentiment. You know, we have to be careful. When markets are very bullish, that's when we need to be the most cautious. We have to say, is this a peak setting up because of that bullish sentiment? Because everyone who is thinking about buying has now already bought. And when everyone who would buy has bought, there is no one left to buy. Mm-hmm. And if there's no one left to buy, the only thing that can happen to the price is it goes down. And that's what we saw in 2011. That was a 9-year peak. The fact that we're not seeing that sentiment now, the fact that the mainstream investor is selling their gold here into this rally as measured by the ETFs, tells me that we still have further to go in this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Getting to the last chart that you sent me here, this is something I found quite interesting. You did a big study on, you know, each breakout and retest of these previous levels. So this can kind of give us a feel for what to expect at these times when, you know, we see some exciting price action. And this can give us, you know, again, be kind of a guide to where we are and where we're headed.
Yeah. So this is a really important chart for investors to grasp about what is setting up here over the intermediate term. Let me just walk you through this. So we're looking at gold in the freely traded era. This is it. There's no other data to refer to. So I'm not cherry picking anything here. We're looking at gold since the Bretton Woods Accord was severed in 1971. So, and what we're looking at is, you know, we talked about earlier how gold has just broken out of this 4-year consolidation, and it's just made a new all-time high. We've been seeing new all-time highs every week here for the last 7 or 8 weeks. This chart is showing every breakout that has ever occurred in the history of gold trading. The red coloring shows breakouts that are similar to what we're seeing today, which is when gold is breaking out to new all-time highs. Mm-hmm. Those are shown in red. The orange lines are following when gold broke out to significant new multi-year highs, you know, such as the breakout above, you can see, look in 2004, it's a double orange line. Mm-hmm. And notice how when gold broke above $400, yes, right there. Just a couple months after that, the first little pop there, yes, in 2004, notice that was a 15-year resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, follow those lines back and imagine that gold had not traded above $400 since the year 1990. So it was a 15-year consolidation that broke out there in 2005. So what I'm showing here on this chart is all of the breakouts to new all-time highs and all of the breakouts that were from significant multi-year highs, but not all-time highs at the time. And the most important point about this chart is that in every single breakout for gold, investors really need to hear me here to prepare for what should be setting up over the next few months. In every single breakout in gold, without exception, there are no exceptions to this. Once gold breaks out, it has then come back down to retest its breakout point where those buyers step in again. And then following the successful retest, there tends to be a more lasting multi-year wave higher to reach significant new highs. Mm-hmm. But again, after that retest, and there are no exceptions to that in freely traded gold history. So here we are looking at gold that's just made a new all-time high about 7 weeks ago. It's been going nearly vertical on the short-term price charts on these geopolitical concerns. That's not sustainable over the short run. So our evidence suggests here, the researched evidence suggests that at some point here within the next couple of months, there will be reasons for the current fears in the market to subside. And a lot of the people that, let's say, panic bought here at the highs above $2,300 per ounce, a lot of the people that were not paying attention to this market when it was trading at $1,600 or $1,700 over the last few years, a lot of those people are going to exit. They're going to sell. And all of the available data suggests that gold should come back plus or minus the 2075 level, mm-hmm, for a retest. And that following that retest, if proven successful, generally these retests are successful, at least they have been in all of the freely traded data when we look at that. But after the retest is when we expect a multi-year, could be 1 year, could be 2 years, could be 3 years, strong and more sustained wave to set up in these markets.
So Christopher, when we're thinking about, you know, all of these different drivers for gold right now, you know, we've obviously gone through the geopolitical ones, but how do you see the other drivers adding up right now? You know, China seems to be buying quite a bit of physical gold, adding to the central bank stockpiles. You know, how does that balance in the demand for gold start adding up in your mind?
The demand is multifaceted. I'm going to give a simple answer to this, and it's not to it's not to come off as belittling to the analysts out there who spend their careers studying the supply and demand metrics, mm-hmm, but for me, as an investor, as a trader of price, ultimately, I don't spend my time worrying about the demand and where the various supply and demand is coming in from. Mm-hmm. Clearly, we know it's not coming in from the Western investor right now. We can, you know, we've looked at that data. We've talked about that from the ETFs, also from the sentiment standpoint. We're not seeing lines around gold shops. We're not seeing 3 month delays to get delivery of bullion here. So it's coming from central banks, it's coming from Eastern buyers. But I want to gravitate more toward how I approach this market. And this comes from the painful lessons that I experienced in the crash of 2008 investing in this sector, when all of the fundamental base analysts were saying in the spring of 2008, as Lehman Brothers was going under, as Bear Stearns was going under, as there were rumors of Wachovia and Bank of America and Citigroup going to be needing to be bailed out, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the entire and General Motors and the entire world, you know, was about to go under. I learned that those people who correctly identified those fundamentals could be completely blindsided about the most important thing from an investment standpoint, which was to pay attention to what the price of the asset that we are investing in is doing. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, you know, after 2008, I learned my lessons then. I am not going to spend my time worrying about all of the fundamentals coming into the market, because the point where all of the fundamentals meet, they all meet at the current price. Current price of gold is $2,382. The price has broken above a very clear multi-year consolidation. Every single breakout in gold trading history to this point has always seen that initial breakout come back to retest the breakout. So I'm aligning with the sum of the evidence of the price data here in preparing my investment plan and for my clients. And that's what I'm going to side with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always interesting to try to consider the fundamentals, which, you know, stack up and never seem to go in a reverse direction. Yet it seems that we need a catalyst sometimes to really set those, all of those factors into motion, right?
Yep. And, you know, it was very interesting to note that this current rally, which really began in October of this year, coincided almost perfectly with the attack on Israel by Hamas. I mean, to the day, October 9th, I believe it was the low for gold. And that's right when these attacks happened. It could have been October 7th. You look at the chart, that's exactly when that low was made for the gold price. So the message that I'm getting here, if you ask me to sort of paint the picture that matches the fundamentals with the price action that we're seeing now, and then extend that out over, let's say, the course of the next 1 to 3 years, it's as follows. There's been panic buying here in the gold market based on geopolitical concerns. This may, in fact, morph into a regional war, a larger war. This may, in fact, morph into World War III. But despite that, the market has already priced in a significant portion of that geopolitical concern here. Geopolitical concerns, even though they can act as triggers, they tend to be short-lived. Even if the global conflict is going to continue to develop, it is not that a market will continue to move in a straight line higher from a price perspective. There will be a shift in the sentiment. Even if this is going to develop into a wider war, there will be a sense that, okay, yeah, the war is going on, but the world is going to survive. The world is going to emerge from the war at some point. And that will cause the short-term panic buying to subside. Some of the people that bought at the peak, once they're underwater by $50 or $75, they will sell. That will start a bit of a cascade of selling over the short run. Mm-hmm. That will bring us back down to the retest of the breakout point. But it's then at that breakout point that I don't use this phrase lightly, but this is what I'm preparing for my own investment plan and for that of my clients. I think there is setting up to be perhaps once in a decade back up the truck moment for everything related to precious metals when we see that retest. You know, we've seen these retests in so many different situations. And it tends to be that at that point, it's the big buyers. It's not the chasers, but it's the big buyers that step back into the market. The central banks, the sovereign wealth funds, and provide the floor under the market again. And from there, it's more long-term trends that are developing, monetary policy, perhaps stimulus related to a developing war, perhaps stimulus related to inflation here in the United States. It's more those longer term trends that then, following the breakout, the back up the truck moment on the retest, carry the market to a period of some years of continuation. Mm-hmm. So if I was to try to marry the fundamentals that are going on in the world right now, including this attack on Iran, on Iranian soil, with the price action, that is what I am expecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to that point, if we look at gold's behavior around the Russian invasion of Ukraine, same exact thing happened, right? We had a spike and then it ultimately ended up pulling back. But
Right. Look at that. I mean, so gold spiked up to 2075 and literally peaked on the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. And 6 months later, gold was $450 lower. Mm-hmm. So anyone who panic bought on the spark, on the geopolitical spark, was hugely underwater, and it took a year and a half for gold to get back to that level. So it's very important for investors. I'm going to assume here, I'm going to allow myself the luxury of assuming that people that are listening to this broadcast have been involved with the precious metals here already for some time. Mm-hmm. So they should already have a core position, and they should be perhaps waiting to add to that position on that retest. That's going to be the higher reward to risk entry point is on the retest. Mm-hmm. New buyers here, if there are any people that are sort of just waking up to this theme and maybe paying attention to some of the headlines of gold at an all-time high, new buyers are in a very tricky spot right now. Because on the one level, look, gold could keep going there over the short run. And if you have no gold at all, if you have zero gold, you do need to have some exposure, mm-hmm. you know. That said, you should not be, this is not the back up the truck moment now. This is the time, if you have no exposure and you're just becoming aware of this theme, you do a modest amount of buying, but you wait for that back up the truck moment. Could be a month from now, could be 3 months from now. Sometimes these retests are 3 to 6 months, you know, from the breakout point. I like to think it's going to be a little sooner, though, perhaps in the 2 to 4 month region from now. Mm-hmm.
Christopher, much of gold's, you know, power, let's say, is based around people seeing it as an inflation hedge. So if that's the case, how do you see the inflationary picture going forward here? Have the central banks around the world really achieved their goal?
No, it's incredible. And I've been disagreeing with the market here for some time on the inflation narrative. I mean, we've seen the inflation rate. Yes, we've seen the headline CPI numbers in the United States come from 9% at the peak a year and a half ago, down to about 4%, 3.9% where they are today. That said, if you look at the month over month for inflation, we've really bottomed here. It looks like we've troughed here at about 3.8 to 4%. The inflation rate has not come down at all over the last year since it came down to this region around 3.8, 3.9%. It's really been moving sideways. And I think the sum of the markets got the inflation story wrong here in thinking that it was a one-off event, in thinking that it was only related to the coronavirus stimulus and that it was then going to come back to that 2%. I think the sum of the markets got it wrong, and that what's happening here is that we're bottoming in this region around 3.8 to 4%. And I think the next move for inflation is actually to start ticking up again, especially if a larger war breaks out here either now or over the coming year. You know, they say that war is the most inflationary of activities that human beings can engage in. And I know because I participated in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq in 2007 and 2009, you know, and I saw it with my own eyes, the amount of waste, the amount of resources that we were using, you know, the amount of dollars that need to be printed out of thin air to pay for all the war expenses. War, by the way, is the only activity that human beings engage in, which is a double destruction. It's a double inflation in the sense that we print money to create weapons, to create bombs. And then with that inflation, we then blow up the products of other people's labor on the other side of the planet. So it's a double inflation when we engage in war. You know, for example, some of the inflationary periods, let's say the stimulus checks that came out in the United States, the printing of money to pay for bailing out banks and whatnot, that's inflationary, yes, but at least it's only inflationary on one side. It's, you know, at least then that money can go be spent into the general economy to buy goods and services. But, you know, if we get a larger war here setting up, I think that's what that could be one of the catalysts that plays into the narrative of inflation not having bottomed here, but actually picking back up again later this year into 2025. And in that case, all of the markets have this wrong. They all have it mispriced across the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting point about it being doubly inflationary because of, you know, not only spending the resources here to make the weapons to go destroy something that needs to be rebuilt and rearmed and, you know, lobbed back. It's an interesting cycle to consider. And it's, you know, such a shame that at this point in human history, we haven't figured out a way to coexist a little bit better than to, you know, keep on a path of escalation.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, the analogy for war from an economic standpoint would be like paying people to dig ditches and then to fill those ditches back up again, but paying them with freshly printed money. So you have the inflation and you have no benefit. And in fact, you know, we could even argue worse than that because you have a net destruction that which then requires more resources to build back up again. So yeah, you know, that could be, I've been looking for why inflation is not coming down anymore. You know, we've been seeing, as we talked about, inflation really troughing here. And the market's saying ahead of time, hey, we're going to come down from 4% back down to 2%. But I haven't seen it in the evidence. I haven't seen it in the data for inflation. And I've been looking for why is this? You know, why are we not seeing inflation come down? And from a chart perspective, why am I suspecting that inflation is actually going to pick up again? That's what the charts have been suggesting to me here over the last 6 months or so. And I'm just filling it in based on news events. What often happens in technical analysis, which is what I specialize in, is we see what is happening ahead of time. We see the what on the charts ahead of time, but the why only fills itself in several months after. So that's kind of what I'm looking at now.
Mm-hmm. Christopher, if their inflation fight, you know, isn't over at this point, one would assume that we need higher rates for longer, as has been the playbook to fight inflation. But what do you see as a potential catalyst for the Fed to shift from its hawkish stance here?
I don't know. I don't know that the Fed is necessarily going to have to shift. They could, it could be the drawing in of the United States into a global or regional war. There's certainly the precedent for that. That could be it. But I don't necessarily even think that the Fed has to shift. If we look at in the 1970s, we had higher interest rates come in waves every 2 to 3 years. And pretty much coinciding with the higher rates, we saw higher commodities prices. You know, the markets are conditioned to believe that right now we need lower rates in order to have higher commodities prices. I think the market is being a little too short-sighted in its, in its analysis and really only looking at the last 20 years. I think we need to look back at previous cycles. There comes a moment where this narrative that the market has been in over the last few years, where every time we see high inflation data, the market sells gold and inflation sensitive assets on the belief that that means the Fed is going to hike. There's going to come a moment where that psychology changes in the markets, where when we start to see higher inflation figures come out, the market realizes that the Fed can't actually hike rates significantly further. Maybe it's because of the war. Maybe it's because of the amount of debt, you know, that's brewing around the world. But I think at some point that psychology is going to change.
So what does all of this mean for silver as well? Has it broken out past its proper resistance levels here?
You know, silver has broken the downward trend that we've seen over the last 4 years. There was a very simple trend of lower and lower prices that has been broken here on the attacks. Really, you know, silver was delayed somewhat from gold. Silver did bottom in October, also on the attacks of Israel by Hamas, but it took silver longer than gold to finally catch a bid, as is normal. So silver has broken that downward trend. There is quite significant resistance, though. However, it should be stated, quite significant resistance at $30 per ounce, pretty much smack on the nose at that $30 level. We had that peak from 2020. There was a subsequent peak in early 21 on this silver squeeze type of rhetoric that was brewing in the markets. All of those investors who bought the peak at 29 or 30 several years ago, it's only human nature that when investors are underwater for 4 years, when the price gets back to that level, some of those investors are in fact going to sell. Mm-hmm. And so here we are, you know, bumping up against 30 again. We saw, you know, silver got up to 30 on Friday, less than a week ago, as we are talking here, actually just below 30, a few cents below 30, and then sold off on Friday afternoon. In about 2.5 hours, silver fell $2 from that peak. I mean, it got right up a few cents away from 30, and then in 2 hours, boom, back down to 28. So we can already see that those sellers exist right at the $30 level. It's not random that that is happening there. Mm-hmm. My best take on silver is that it is not ready to break 30 right now. We talked about, from a highest probability, all of the available data in freely traded gold history suggests to us that gold at some point here over the next few months will need to make a retest of its breakout point. By the way, sometimes those retests are not literal to the dollar, to the specific dollar. Sometimes it's more of a zone. Gold could come $25 or $50 away, and that can constitute a functional retest. But assuming that all of the available data that we have to refer to is going to provide us with a good model this time again, concurrent to gold's retest, I would see silver retracing here back to about $24 to $25 from where it is now at just above $28. Mm-hmm. $4 decline, $3 decline. The higher above that level that silver bottoms, if silver was to bottom at 26, that's a very bullish sign. Mm-hmm. But again, I would encourage investors that the back up the truck moment, the time to be the most aggressive that one could comfortably be. I'm not telling people to sell their houses and you know, go on margin, you know, and do things that would compromise their lives from a bigger picture. But the moment to be the most aggressive that one could reasonably be for this cycle is going to be on gold's retest. And that should coincide with a retrace in silver back down to 24 to 25. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm looking at here over the next several months.
Do you think that it will be seen as a monetary metal or investment metal again, rather than just an industrial commodity?
I'm skeptical that silver will return to be a monetary metal full time in perpetuity. But during certain windows, in fact, it will. And clearly, you know, we've seen hints of that here over the last 6 to 7 weeks. And it looks to me like if this is a hint of the larger wave that will be developing for the next 1 to 3 years in the metals, it looks like we're going to have a window where silver does regain some of that safe haven monetary role. And there could be a repricing of the metal in that period of time. I think when we look forward super long term after this cycle, I think silver goes back to being mostly an industrial metal that could be at higher prices, though, than it is today.
Christopher, of course, you do elite private placements as well, really looking into and diving deep in junior miners. When investors are looking at these junior mining projects, it can get very confusing for the average person, I think. How do you try to value, let's say, ounces in the ground to get a feel for what the value of a stock should be?
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely fascinating. And this plays into what we were talking about a few moments ago about how the sentiment is not at the level that would yet coincide with a long-term top. Whether we're talking about the anecdotes from my own life, whether we're talking about the ETF outflows that are happening as the price is rising. Another one of those sentiment type of indicators related to mining is if we go back and we look at how the market, you know, the sum of participants, how did the market value ounces of gold in the ground in previous cycles? So in other words, if you just have a very simple company that let's say is sitting on a deposit of 2 million ounces of gold. Back in 2010 and 2011, when gold prices were not even what they are today, you know, a few hundred dollars less, what was the market cap of that company? Most of these deposit stage, development stage companies have no debt, so we don't need to factor in any debt. It's simply the number of shares outstanding times the share price gives you the market cap of the company. And then you say, okay, for simple companies that let's say only have one or two deposits, you take the amount of gold that they have in the ground and you're dividing that into the market cap of the company. So back in 2010, 2011, when the psychology of this market was more robust, we talked about all those anecdotes, from various circles of life. When more people were interested, the market was assigning a value to these development stage gold mining companies of between $50 to $100 per ounce in the ground. So a company that was sitting on 2 million ounces of gold would have a market cap between $100 million to a $200 million valuation for that gold in the ground. Now, where the sentiment is not what it was back then in 2010 and 2011, but the gold prices are higher. We know of development stage companies. I mean, really across the board, I'm seeing gold in the ground selling not for $50 to $100, what it sold for in the last cycle, but between $5 to $10 per ounce in the ground.
That's so crazy to consider.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely crazy. And that is 100% a function of psychology. That is not a function of dilution of shares, because we're taking market cap versus market cap comparison here. The number of shares add into the market cap. It's not skyrocketing costs for the miners, because we're not looking at producing mines. We're looking at development stage gold in the ground. The market is assigning valuations that are generally about 1/10 of what they were back 10, 12 years ago. And so, you know, when something falls by 90%, or in other words, if there's only 1/10 of the value being put on it today, to get back to the previous valuation would imply a 10-fold increase in valuations just to get back to where the gold was valued a decade ago. Mm-hmm. That doesn't then factor in the price that, hey, the gold price is higher today than it was back then. So, yes, you know, in elite private placements, what we do is we invest in these development stage gold mining companies. We do so at preferred terms. We get warrants in addition to our shares, which gives us additional upside, you know, if the company succeeds. But I mean, we are buying companies. I'm not exaggerating. The data supports this. We're buying companies that all have the potential for 10x returns just to get back to a fair valuation, let alone if valuations then continue higher from there. So there's an immense value proposition here for investors that have appropriate risk tolerance. Mm-hmm. You know, it is certainly not the same buying gold mining companies compared to buying physical gold that you can hold in your hand. There are additional risks. But for investors that have the means and an already diversified portfolio to take a few targeted, you know, to use the baseball analogy, a few targeted big swings, we have grand slam potential basically coming to us right here at the plate. Mm-hmm. So it's really something to think about.
How do you try to consider different jurisdictions as you're looking at these companies? You know, it would seem that if you have, let's say, a similar size deposit in a risky jurisdiction, one would need to value that quite a bit differently than what would normally be considered, without the use of a crystal ball, to be considered a safe jurisdiction.
Yeah, for sure. I tend to stay to some of the more safer jurisdictions. I tend to stick to Nevada, United States, which is an excellent mining jurisdiction. I tend to stick to Canada, British Columbia, Yukon. There's a couple on the eastern side of Canada as well. We own one company in Quebec. We own a company that's up there in Newfoundland as well. Those are excellent jurisdictions. I own a few deposits that are in Mexico. Mexico is, there are some rumblings about changing the mining laws there in Mexico, but those laws are not going to be changed in a way that materially hamstrings the company's mining industry over the long run. Mm-hmm. Way too much of Mexico's economy is dependent on silver mining. The largest silver mining country in the world is Mexico. They are not about to cut off that source of revenue and funding and jobs for their country permanently. So when we, you know, but even leaving Mexico aside for now, if we were to consider like the premier safe jurisdictions around the world, let's call it some of the Western states in the United States, and let's call it some of those provinces in Canada, you know, politically safe Western pro-mining jurisdictions, the valuations that I'm talking about are inclusive of that. You know, I'm talking about gold in the ground that's selling for $5 to $10 per ounce in Nevada, United States, in very pro-mining friendly counties in Nevada, that in the previous cycle was selling for $100 per ounce. You know, so investors certainly can take on additional risk that would bring additional reward if they want to look into jurisdictions like, you know, in Latin America, for example, or in Africa, for example. At this point, because the valuations are so absurdly cheap in the safe jurisdictions, I don't necessarily see the need to venture into some of the less safe jurisdictions. But yeah, the valuations that I'm talking about are really for the premier jurisdictions at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to really consider and be able to find these gems, these deals that are still available in this market in these safe jurisdictions with a seemingly very good risk to reward ratio.
I think that's the thing that's difficult for new investors in the sector to grasp, how much of a dichotomy there is with gold literally making a new all-time high this week, last week, every week here for the last 7 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. That many of these defined gold deposits in the ground are literally bumping along against 52-week lows at the same time as their product is making new all-time highs in price. And so, you know, I think it's difficult for new investors in the sector to really grasp the opportunity that they're being given. Again, you have to have the right risk tolerance. You have to have the right situation in your investment portfolio. Mm-hmm. I do suggest that investors have a core position in the physical metal. That's your life raft. That's your real savings account, right? Your savings account that cannot be debased. So it's important to do that. But once you have that core holding, if you have that risk tolerance, I think you have a once in a generation divergence here between the gold in the hand and the gold below ground. It won't last forever. So it's really something to think about right now for new investors.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, Christopher. Well, I think that's a reasonable place to kind of wrap up today's conversation. Is there anything else that you would like to leave our listeners to think about?
It's to just think about the opportunity here that is in front of us, but also not to get, you know, the world is very turbulent right now, and there's a lot of negative things happening, and I've lived through them myself, being in the war in Afghanistan, and I just want to encourage investors to protect themselves, prepare themselves, invest accordingly, take advantage of some of these opportunities, but also don't stop living your life. You know, throughout history, wars happen. Throughout history, hyperinflations happen. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to get that bad, but we look throughout history at the hyperinflations that have happened. These things happen. There are certain periods of time, yes, to secure the hatches and spend a little time hiding in the bunker, but not forever. And mm-hmm. even in the great hyperinflations and even in the wars, you know, as London was being bombed in World War II, they were having parties with the blackout curtains, right, covering their, you know, the light sources there. And in the hyperinflations in Germany in between World War I and World War II, was some of the most thriving culture that they had there at that same time. So I think it's important to be an aware citizen, keep alert, take advantage of some of these opportunities, and keep living at the same time.
Well, Christopher, I appreciate your optimism and that wonderful advice. I think, you know, it's a great asset to be able to, you know, absorb some of this information, some of this news, act accordingly, and then be able to, you know, shut your screen off and go outside and enjoy some of your life, some of your loved ones, whatever it might be. Christopher, I really appreciate your time today. Of course, for anybody that wants to learn more from Christopher or learn more about the private placements, that's all available at igoldadvisor.com. Also an excellent Twitter follow at iGlobalGold on Twitter. Christopher, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tom, for having me.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.